Little bit afternoon, and you're in tune to KZSU Stanford, and it's time once again for another edition of the exciting, always interesting Lunch Special.
We got to get you a healing from the bottom of your heart. Get you a healing, it's the only place to start. Forgive all the people who have ever brought you harm. Get you healing with loving from now on.
We got to get you healing for your body and your soul. Get you healing, it's good for the young and old. Fix all the problems with the people that you know. Get you healing and let your loving show.
Get you healing.
By learning how to share.
Learn how to share.
Get you a healing. Let people know you care.
Let them know you care.
Show them that you love them by really being there.
You
get you a healing. Breathe the fresh air.
We got to get you healing from the bottom of your heart. Get you healing. It's the only place to
start.
Give all the people who you healing with loving from now on.
Get You a Healing, the brand new CD from the New Orleans Musicians Clinic, and all the proceeds go to benefit New Orleans musicians. And that was Irma Thomas with Alan Toussaint and a host of characters. And that's the name of the new CD, too, by the way, Get You a Healing. You can get it on Amazon, but go to the New Orleans Musicians Clinic website, neworleansmusiciansclinic.org. And it's most appropriate that we play that song today because in the house, former Stanford student body president. Now yeah. we have a new segment called Checking In with the Alums. See
yes.
what they've been doing.
It's been a long time.
Yeah,
it's 1991 I graduated, so you know.
It took us all that time to get you on the air.
For me to drive back 45 miles from Oakland. Nice.
Amy Allison, Amy Allison, welcome to these airwaves.
It's great to be here. Good to see you, Bird, and good to be here at KZSU.
It is, and your time at Stanford, you know, like a lot of other students too, and we don't like to dwell on this, but you were aware of the radio probably because of sports, but you never came down here.
Well, you know what? This is my first time really on the air in the studio. It's awesome, little basement studio here, but I always had the poster. You know, there's a poster with KZSU, the idea of having our own radio stations. Awesome. And actually, we get it in Oakland, too.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is great. Now, I'm going to run it down just briefly so we don't eat up too much time. But you're a former Stanford student body president, former conscientious objector during the first Gulf War. And you got out of that Thank goodness, alive and well, and you made it. You had to fight the government for it, but you won.
Yeah, well, I joined the military before I came to Stanford, and I was in the reserves. I served at the Palo Alto VA the whole time, so.
Amazing.
You know.
What a story. Then you graduated Stanford, mm-hmm. taught school for a while in the Redwood City.
The high school there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Woodside High?
Sequoia High School.
Yeah, there
mm-hmm.
you go. And
then I went on to corporate life.
Yeah, you tell the story.
And 5 years ago, I left that, walked away, ran for office, and ended up in media doing the morning show with KPFA, which is a public radio Pacifica affiliated station. I did that for 3 years, the morning show.
I'm sure there's some people listening right now that know that voice.
Yeah.
And in November, they had cutbacks and they took away the morning show. So you went on to something else. And what have you been doing? That's where we're going to catch up with the alum. What's been going on?
Well, you know, the first thing is I love radio, so I want to continue doing that. And I took a job directing Roots Action, which is a new online political action organization, kind of like Move On, but not associated with any particular political party. But the basic idea is to put the war in Afghanistan, the cost of the war, and also domestic issues back on the agenda so people are talking about those things, mm-hmm. kind of move away from the politics of attack that we saw and move toward a wider public dialogue that really should have a place in the democratic process. So rootsaction.org is the website, and I invite people to join up and see what we're up to. I also just came back last night from Washington, D.C., where I was on Radio Row as a part of a Families USA healthcare reform conference. And when I was there, I had an opportunity to meet up with and interview a number of people who have been at the center of healthcare reform. Now, you might think that's done. This is the thing. Healthcare reform, that bill passed. Remember, they were fighting over it.
Remember
public option?
Yeah,
that
right.
was the big thing.
Right.
And remember, a lot of progressives were saying, hey, what about single payer? Here in California, single payer approach to providing health care reform and those changes, that was what was popular. That was taken off the table really early in the process.
Okay,
so the bill passed last year.
We got it, didn't we?
We got it, but what I learned at the conference, and we heard from doctors, we heard from political advocates, we heard from the president on Friday. What I heard is that now that it's been implemented, or it's being implemented, the new Republican-controlled Congress made it their very first priority to vote to rescind the bill.
Can they do that?
Well, they passed it in the House, but the Senate's not taking it up. So it was a symbolic act first, but they're trying to tie health care reform to the fact that the deficit is so huge. And saying we can't have health care reform because of the deficit.
Oh, we owe too much money?
We owe too much. Of course, why do we have a big deficit?
Why?
No one ever said the three letters, which is the reason we have a huge deficit.
What are the three letters?
W-A-R,
war.
The war in Afghanistan, the continuing war in Iraq. We were like maxed out on all our credit cards paying for these wars, but that never was discussed.
Anyway, really?
So you have a situation now where healthcare reform is really under attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to hear today, because I brought with me a couple of interviews for some high-level people. One is a Congressman Javier Becerra, who's from Los Angeles. He's been in the middle of the healthcare reform fight. And the other is Bob Edgar, who's the president and CEO of Common Cause, which is an organization that's been advocating for good government. And I spoke to them, along with some dozens of other folks, about how healthcare and the healthcare crisis and reform fits into the broad picture of what's happening. So that's what I've been doing. I'm kind of excited.
Yeah.
Because national kind of what I love is being able to say, look, we're here in the Bay Area. We live in a bit of a bubble. It's true.
Sure.
But we also have a way to we got to relate to some of these national issues and figure it all out here.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the center of it all, D.C., and I brought back some interviews that kind of lay those issues out.
Should we listen to one of them?
That's right. Yeah, I want to start with Bob Edgar's Common Cause. Now, Common Cause is a good government organization, and he talks to me not only about where healthcare reform is right now. What are the dangers to the fact that this healthcare reform stretched out over 4 years, where it might be in danger? And,
mm-hmm.
And also, he talks about this issue with Supreme Court justices and the Koch brothers. I'm going to let him do the talking, but this is me having a conversation with the president and CEO of CommonCause.org, Bob Egger, late last week.
It's Amy Allison with here in Washington, D.C. at the Families USA Conference. It's all about health care reform. I'm very happy to have Bob Egger, who's president and CEO of Common Cause, joining us. Bob, thanks for joining us here.
It's great to be with you.
All right, so we're talking about health care reform. The Republicans are making a move on Capitol Hill. What's really going on? Because it was a symbolic vote to repeal the health care reform. Looks like the Senate's not going to take it up. But what's really happening?
Well, I was disappointed in what the Republicans tried to do by the symbolic vote to repeal health care. After the tragic shooting in Tucson, we were all calling on folks to be much more civil. And for the first action of Congress to repeal the health care bill, rather than reform it, repair it, offer an alternative, just was outrageous. I serve on the board of Families USA. I've been active on the board at the National Coalition on Health Care. We worked very hard on health care. Because of some tactical efforts on the Senate side with the filibuster, we got a health care bill that wasn't what everyone wanted, but it was the best that could be passed, and it was the most significant legislation since Social Security was passed, because it added at least 20 million new people to the health care rolls. And if anything, in the United States, we recognize that, you know, having 20, 30, 40 million people outside the health care network is bad for them. It's bad for the country. It's expensive because they use the emergency rooms to get their health care, and many of them suffer illnesses and don't have the kind of preventive health care that is needed.
Yet we're hearing that the health care reform, as it's being implemented, and most people don't understand, it's going to take years for us to see the results of the health care reform bill. The Republicans are calling it job killing. They're saying that the deficit is so big that we can't afford it.
Well, the Republicans, they killed a better health care bill. They killed a bill that would have been implemented sooner. What we got was delayed by tactics that were simply to say no to anything that was proposed. I think Common Cause believes we should have had more of a public option. We ought to have a stronger health care bill. But it got through the Senate and the House under extraordinary challenges by conservatives, and it will take some time to implement. But it's a very strong bill. It helps people with pre-existing illnesses. It helps families who want to keep their children on the health care, their own insurance up until they're age 26. It saves money. It creates some jobs. It can be repaired and fixed, and that's what the Republicans should have been doing, is offering constructive reform measures. I think even the president acknowledged the other night in the State of the Union that he's willing to look at things like the cost of some of the legal aspects of health care, putting limits on what kind of rewards that can be made. There are ways to repair and heal the bill. But
that's through implementation, right? They're not going to go back to Congress and ask them to actually pass new legislation around that.
Well, there may be new legislation. Senator Tom Harkin this morning, addressing this conference, pointed out that when Social Security was passed in the mid-30s, there were problems with it. And in subsequent Congresses, they healed and repaired those challenges. We expect the same thing with health care.
Bob Egger, President and CEO of Common Cause. I want to talk to you about the news out this week that two Supreme Court justices have been in trouble. It's been exposed that both Justice Scalia and Thomas had meetings with the Koch brothers, the big funders of the Tea Party. Was not disclosed previously. Common Cause has been on the case. What did you find out? What's going on?
Well, frankly, we're very disappointed in the conservatives on the Supreme Court. They were appointed to serve all of the people of the United States. And when we discovered that they have been attending and speaking at ultra-conservative events and doing it at the same time that they're reviewing campaign finance laws in the Supreme Court, we decided to do some research. We discovered, for example, that Justices Scalia and Thomas appeared before the David and Charles Koch seminars. Charles and David Koch are multi-billionaires who, for the last 30 years, have been trying to make the House and Senate far more ultra-conservative, far more supportive of corporations than average people. And these two guys, Scalia in 07, Thomas in 08, in 09 started listening to the Citizens United case, and in January, just a year ago, they passed a decision out of the Supreme Court by a 5-4 vote, giving corporations the ability to dip into their corporate treasuries and spend that on campaigns.
Well, it takes the shackles off of a corporation's role in electioneering. A huge decision.
Right. No one before that decision thought that corporations and labor unions didn't already have quite a bit of influence through political action committees. This means they can take their corporate treasuries even over and above shareholders' rights.
Now, when Common Cause broke this story last week, and I know you're discovering and you're in the news even finding out Justice Thomas hasn't been reporting his wife's income for years.
Well, by accident, we decided to research who was funding their trips to Palm Springs for the Koch brothers' events, and we discovered it was the Federalist Society. And we then went and looked at their financial disclosure records, which are fairly simple forms to fill out, and we discovered that Justice Thomas had checked none related to his wife's income. And we said, wait a minute, she works for the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative foundation. She founded a group called Liberty Central, and there's evidence that. So we went and checked on what are called 990s, which all organizations have to submit to the IRS, and discovered that she had received over $600,000 over the last few years. None of it reported in Thomas's forms. So on Monday, he not only went back and resubmitted 13 years' worth of financial statements, correcting the mistakes, but he said it was inadvertent. He didn't understand the forms.
And I find that hard to buy. The Supreme Court justice is just,
absolutely.
You know.
What other issues are hard for him to understand? Right. And let's go back on the Citizens United case. The Citizens United case was a 5-4 decision. And if either Scalia or Thomas had, in fact, talked with these ultra-conservative organizations, they should have recused themselves. And there's such a thing as retroactive recusal or to vacate the case, and that's what we asked the Attorney General to do last Thursday, is to have the Supreme Court vacate their decision, rethink that decision, which will have enormous impact.
Would that then put Citizens United and the results of that decision on hold if Attorney General Holder takes that move?
If Attorney General Holder, because of the separation of powers, it's very difficult. Attorney General Holder is now asked to review the evidence to see whether, in fact, there was a conflict of interest. If he discovers that, then his Solicitor General then has to go to Chief Justice Roberts and give that evidence. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court gets to decide what to do, and they've let it up to their individual justices to decide what is a conflict of interest and what is not. The new Justice Kagan recused herself from almost a third of all of the decisions this year simply because some of the actions were before her Solicitor General's office prior to her becoming a Supreme Court Justice. She's been very faithful in that. And one other thing, if Sandra Day O'Connor had still been on the court, the decision on Citizens United would have been 5-4 the other direction. So it's a very important case. And finally, here's my fear. We're coming up on the 2012 election. A rogue corporation or a wealthy individual, a billionaire, could put $1 billion or more on day one on the presidential campaign for or against a particular candidate because of the Supreme Court's decision.
So it's really, timing is of the essence in terms of, I mean, to call the actions of Justice Scalia and Thomas a conflict of interest is just, to me, it sounds like it's just scratching the surface. In conversations I've been reading online and blogs, people are like, aren't these impeachable offenses? We've never had a Supreme Court justice impeached, as far as I know, in our nation's history. Why isn't that on the table? Why isn't that being discussed?
Yeah. Well, we're waiting for the outcome of Attorney General Holter's investigation. If there is direct evidence of a conflict of interest, I do think there are some questions. Our next action in the next coming weeks is going to take this to the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate and have them investigate as well.
It's new ground here.
It is new ground.
Common Cause is continuing the investigation. Have you expanded your investigation past Scalia and Thomas to other members of the court?
Well, every day we're looking. Common Cause was founded 40 years ago by moderate Republicans. It's a bipartisan, nonpartisan organization. It was founded to be a watchdog. John Gardner, who founded us, said everyone had special interest in Washington or lobbyist in Washington, but average ordinary people. So we're founded to hold power accountable. We're going to look where we can. We're not simply out to get anyone or pile on to anyone. We just want to make sure that government works for the people and by the people, and democracy is not soiled by either the Congress of the United States or by the Supreme Court. We're really walking in the shoes of our founding fathers, who were pretty bright in putting the Constitution together. We want to make sure the Supreme Court does its job, not for liberals or conservatives, but for all of the people of the United States.
Well, I tell you, the biggest fight now, and people aren't talking about it around the water cooler yet, but it's corporate power versus democracy and getting that back in balance. I want to thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thanks.
Bob Edgar is our guest, president and CEO of Common Cause. More information is available on the website, commoncause.org.
Yep. Good to be with you.
And that's the former student body president of Stanford University, Amy Allison. And she's with us today, our guest. And you just conducted that interview in the last few days,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right in Washington, D.C., near the Capitol, where Families USA, which is a national healthcare reform organization, was pulling together their annual conference. And, you know, Common Cause is not a radical organization. These are like good government moderates who are going after two Supreme Court justices for working with these billionaire Koch brothers. Now, if people haven't heard about this, this is going to be the story of 2011. So I was really glad to be able to talk to him more about
that. How did you not fall out of your chair when he was telling you all that
stuff?
I
could not believe that we have Supreme Court justices that are working with and attending political meetings with the Koch brothers.
Isn't that against the law?
Well, hello. Conflict of interest. He just explained that our newest Supreme Court justice, as well as Sandra Day O'Connor, have recused themselves.
Stanford grad, by
yeah,
the way.
Another Stanford grad.
That's right.
Recused themselves of decisions that were conflicts of interest. It is what should happen. And they did not do that. Then the Citizens United decision that both Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas voted for.
Yes.
And it was a 5-4 decision.
Yes.
Ended up freeing corporations to spend unlimited amounts in election-related expenses. That was a groundbreaking decision. They were part of it, and they worked with the Koch brothers, who, by the way, their biggest project right now is funding the Tea Party. So if that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what it is. Nobody there talked about impeachable offense, but hey, we love democracy here.
Right.
We love American democracy. We want to make sure that it works.
That's right.
And in the case of two Supreme Court justices, they should be held to task. And I think what Common Cause is doing is an important part of that.
You know, some journalists go out and they do pieces on all kind of different stuff. And you know, when you do pieces like this, it kind of radicalizes you, doesn't it? Because it would incense anybody, because it's you're learning information that's got to catch your hair on fire if you're human, right?
I tell you. But there's also a great honor in being a journalist, particularly an independent journalist,
mm-hmm.
who goes out and brings stories that may not make it on CNN or may not make it on
mainstream
the Fox
media.
Yeah, it's really about covering issues and telling the stories of what's going on. You know, the average student
on campus may not say, you know, the Koch brothers had nothing to do with me. But actually, it has everything to do not only with all of us who are part of this American democracy, but how our country's going to go forward. And so to bring the stories out are a great honor. I've been doing this work for 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And every time I'm able to tell a story that's not being told and people learn about it and then they actually do stuff. In fact, you were telling me before we came on the air about people going down to Palm Springs to the Koch brothers annual event and trying to call them to task. I mean, it actually, this kind of coverage can translate to real action.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Amy Allison, the guest for the hour, just got back from D.C. from the healthcare conference. And again, folks, if you don't really want to know about healthcare, it might affect you too. So maybe you need to know about it. Let's take a quick musical break. This is another song off this great new CD because it's countrywide now. Down in New Orleans, they have the Musicians Clinic, and the government funding was cut. And the New Orleans Musicians Clinic is nonprofit, and they help all musicians in New Orleans, serious musicians, real ones, and their families get not free health care, they get taken care of, and they kick some in too. And this new CD, Get You a Healin', you can go on the New Orleans Musicians Clinic website. All the proceeds go to benefit the clinic. Here's another song off it, and we'll be right back with Amy Allison.
I'm a little sick, baby. I think I must have caught that thing they call her. With a rockin' pneumonia. But you gon' give me some boogie-woogie flu to top it off.
That is the Funky Meters off that brand new CD from the New Orleans Musicians Clinic, Get You a Healin'. Want to let you know that all these shows, the lunch special, are archived at Radio for All. You can hear all of them. And we want to thank our producer for that, Blue, for archiving all these shows. They go up about the day after the show, and you can go back, tell your friends, and you can download it. You can listen to it, whatever you want to do. That's at Radio, the number four, All, Radio for All, and get the lunch special right there. Amy Allison, back to you. Yeah. Amazing work you're doing these days.
It's
this is
exciting.
Incredible.
Well, I'm really glad to be able to share it with the KZSU audience.
Yeah, definitely. And it's such an honor to have you back on campus like this.
It's kind of cool, you know. It makes me feel young.
20 years ago, yeah. You graduated.
You look at all these students with their backpacks, and I go, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, Stanford's also a place, kind of the center of so many, you know, world leaders and important thinkers and activists and, you know, people in science all come through here.
Yeah.
So in a way, if we look at the Bay Area and we look at the country, it's really an honor for KZSU to be in the middle of that and be able to tap into some of that expertise.
Definitely.
As well.
And, you know, looking at the history of KZSU, Daniel Pearl, the journalist who got murdered at the first days of the Afghan War. Was here. He was part of the news department. Yeah. Pete Williams from he was at the Pentagon. Now he's with NBC News. He was here. Rachel Maddow was not a product of KZSU, but of Stanford. Rachel Maddow on MSNBC.
All the best people.
I know. Sandra Day O'Connor, former Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah, it's quite a legacy, isn't it? It's something to be very proud of. And I'm really glad that KZSU's taken advantage of it.
Thank you. And we're honored to have you here. Let's get on with your interviews. Now, you've been doing some amazing work. You were just in D.C. With this healthcare conference, and you said you were in on the president's.
Now, the president spoke to the Families USA conference Friday, so just 3 days ago.
Okay.
And it's kind of like he walked in there like a rock star, because you had a crowd of about 1,000 healthcare activists, people who had been fighting for healthcare reform. And this was one, if you look at 2010, this was one of the victories that the Democratic Party could claim. They got through healthcare reform where former presidents weren't able to do that. And so the president walked in and gave a talk, and I was in the White House press pool for that day, so I was able to cover that event. And then also ask Congressman Javier Becerra from Los Angeles to reflect on what the president said and to give his opinion about it. And he also talked about some of the other contributors to the deficit. We talked about the war and other things. So here's my chat with Congressman Javier Becerra out of Los Angeles.
I'm Amy Allison here at the Families USA conference, where the theme of the day is healthcare reform. But we're very happy to talk about healthcare reform and a lot of other issues important to people in LA and across the nation. Congressman Xavier Becerra, representing Los Angeles, is here on the mic. It's good to have you.
Amy, thanks for having me. By the way, the X in my case is pronounced like an H, so it's Javier.
Javier. Let's first talk about health care reform.
Sure.
You were a big advocate of it last year. It's passed, and now the Republicans are making a play to either take the air out of the balloon or do an end run through implementation so it doesn't have the strength. I mean, what's your read on what's happening right now on Capitol Hill?
You know, spoil sports will sometimes do that. If you've seen the kid at the playground who says, "I didn't like the way you played, I'm taking my marbles and going home," that's what we see. The Republicans did not like that we were able to do what 70 years of Congresses and presidents weren't, and that's to pass historic protections and rights for people when it comes to their health care. And certainly there are a whole bunch of special interests that are backing up the Republicans and trying to help defeat and repeal this new law, because guess what? It was aimed at helping patients and Americans, not at helping the insurance industry and the special interests that make so much money out of healthcare.
I mean, after that big fight last year, are you surprised? You actually go, Democrats are in, or particularly progressive Democrats who are trying to defend the healthcare reform legislation. Now they're playing defense.
Yeah. Well, we'll be on offense now. We're not going to play defense anymore, because now the Republicans have something different to deal with. They have to be responsible. They're now in control of the House. And now, instead of just throwing bombs, they have to explain what they would do, because they are the majority. And guess what? We get to say, Americans, you have something to compare what they say they'll do with what we did, because what we did is now the law. Your rights are now there. Your protections are now there in the law.
Well, let's talk about a big fight that you're engaged in, which is in your new position. You're going to have to be in the position of dealing with Social Security. We see not only from the president's comments at a State of the Union, but we see from what the Republicans have been saying this week, that Social Security is at the top of their list. Hey, we want to decrease the deficit, so let's look at Social Security.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with that dynamic?
I'm going to pounce on this one, Amy, because this is about as clear a distinction between what's broken and what's fictionally in need of change. Social Security has been the most successful program, private sector or public sector, that we've seen in this nation. And guess what? If you're 25, 30 years of age and say, "I'm not going to retire for a whole long time, why do I need to worry about Social Security?" I would say to you this: go shop. If you're 25, 30 years of age, 40 years of age, go shop around. See how much it would cost you to get a pension, some kind of a 401k pension plan, how much it would cost you to get a life insurance plan, and how much it would cost to get a disability insurance plan for you, so that you can make it to your retirement age and live in dignity. So pension, life insurance, and disability insurance. Cost them out. See what it would cost.
In the Bay Area, they'd say those are hell of expensive. They're not affordable for
the
average
person. And guess what? You wouldn't even get them, because most insurance companies wouldn't offer you the three of those the way Social Security does. Why? Because Social Security will give you benefits till you die. So an insurance company will say, well, we gave you benefits for 10 years. You've run out. Social Security has never said that and will continue to pay.
You know, but most Americans, or you poll them, they support continuing Social Security.
That's right.
Why are the Republicans still continue to focus on either changing Social Security or eliminating it or privatizing it or some way touching that program?
Well, for two reasons they want to privatize it. One, Wall Street wants to privatize it. There's a lot of money in Social Security. They want that money to go into their pockets before it gets invested versus putting it into your own pocket through the trust fund with Social Security. Secondly, they've never liked the idea of the people through the government helping the rest of the people, our family, American family, have a nest egg for retirement, a secured, guaranteed nest egg for retirement. They'd rather let the private sector do it. I don't blame them for that.
But look, people who have been saving, who are convinced that 401ks, including yours truly, that the 401k was the way to go, maxed out on that, and then looked at the value of that, go way, way down. There's no way. That's not retirement for me.
Bingo.
And it's not retirement for millions of Americans.
You just said it. That's what goes on between privatized Social Security and Social Security as we know it. Social Security as we know it is there forever, guaranteed. You privatize it, you put yourself in the hands of Wall Street. And Wall Street may make you money 1 year, but they sure can lose you lots of money the next year.
Let me talk about the fact that, we know there's hard times. The president said in his State of the Union, we got to freeze domestic spending. You think that's that's 12% of the budget. Was that sort of a gimme to kind of silence critics? That's not going to take care of the deficit. The war continues. He wasn't really addressing the fact that that's caused the majority of the deficit. So I guess my question here is, when they talk about freezing domestic spending and touching some of those same programs, Medicare and others, if you're a member of the Progressive Caucus, how do you address that fact that you're trying to protect social programs and at the same time deal with the deficit?
Well, he did something that's very important. He has talked about, the president has talked about making sure that if we make do an overall freeze, that we don't freeze everything. What we do is we pick the best programs and let them have investments, whereas we get the programs that aren't working, and they're the ones that get cut. And so it's very targeted. If you do that, you might be able to get away with making an overall freeze in spending in the federal government. But you have to be targeted, because if you just do it with an axe, you're going to cut off very important programs for our kids in schools, for our seniors in the senior citizen centers. And as you just said, we're going to cut essential health care and Social Security programs that people rely on and don't realize that they may be on the chopping block.
I want to talk to you about what's happening in the state of California. I live in the Bay Area. You're down in Los Angeles. I know your constituents are concerned. Jerry Brown, who's a Democrat, who's just reassumed the governor's seat, has been making some interesting proposals at the state level. One of the things he wants to do is push more responsibility for things like health care and our other kinds of services that the state had been responsible down to the counties, and the counties are saying, we can't do that. What's the role of the federal government in funding these things and this kind of pass the hat thing that we're doing, or pass the hot potato, I should say, to push off to other entities the responsibility of providing health care?
Remember that the more local the service, the better it will typically be, because if you're not getting good service, it's easy to go next door to the local elected member or to your agency person locally and say, I need better service. Whereas try to travel to Washington, D.C. if you're not getting good service back home. That's why Washington, D.C. doesn't take care of garbage collection in our local communities. But what you have to remember is that those local governments have to have a source of revenue to pay for those services. Typically, they have had. Way back, the state started gobbling up the revenues that the local governments used to have. I think Jerry Brown is saying, let's return to the local governments those revenues so they can start offering those services themselves directly.
You're supportive of it.
I'm supportive so long as you follow, the money follows the service. If you don't give the money, it's hard to pay for the service.
That's what I hear county supervisors and others saying state of California. Hey, unfunded mandate? Are you kidding?
Right.
Well, let's talk about, you've been boxing with Fox News over whether states have the right to declare bankruptcy. Look, state of California, we are facing this huge deficit. That's why Jerry Brown is talking about this his version of the austerity plan. Should states be able to declare bankruptcy to be able to get out of, you know, their mess, or, you know, to get out of their debts?
It's a crazy idea, and it's also against the law. I mean, a state's not going to declare bankruptcy. And at the same time, we are the United States of America, United States. We are a union. We work together. And that's why the federal government is part of that fabric that lets us know that our government will not fall. And so as we hear Republicans talk about allowing states to go bankrupt, essentially what they're saying is, let's let states abrogate their obligations by contract to the people that have worked providing services to the people of those states, workers.
Really we're talking about unions and state
Absolutely.
Workers. Because I was going to say, if a state declares bankruptcy, what does that practically mean?
That means that the state gets to put on hold all of its obligations to pay for any services that it agreed to pay, that it promised to pay.
What states are talking about doing this?
It's not states that are talking about doing this. It's Republicans who are talking about doing this.
Republicans are encouraging
Absolutely.
The right of states to declare bankruptcy.
They don't like the fact that men and women have organized to collectively bargain and get better benefits and salaries, and they want to kill the unions. And so what do they want to do? They talk euphemistically about states declaring bankruptcy. Really what they're saying is, let the government, especially Republican governors, walk away from a collective bargaining agreement, from a contract that the state signed. It's a really dark way of trying to kill benefits that people have earned.
So you're going to be defending those, obviously, defending those rights. And
not just defending. We're going to run over people who try to do this, because it would not only be bad for workers to all of a sudden find that they're paying for the sins of politicians. It wasn't the workers who overspent those state budgets. It was the politicians. And so yet the politicians want the workers to pay, just the way Wall Street wanted Americans to pay for their recklessness in investing. We can't let that happen. But more than that, what these guys, what Republicans are saying is that letting states go bankrupt gives the states added power against the people, because they can now do all sorts of crazy things by saying, I know I agreed to do this for you, but I just declared bankruptcy, so I'm out of that obligation.
Congressman Becerra from Los Angeles is here with me in Washington, D.C. We're here at a conference. You can hear the background noise where people are all around in the conference, Families USA, to talk about health care reform. But, I got to ask you about the Progressive Congressional Caucus. It's the largest caucus in Congress with, I believe, 84 members, but they don't vote as a block. Why is that? Why can't progressives get it together, particularly because the Republicans are now in control? And how do you respond to the millions of progressives who say, we actually don't want you to compromise. We actually want you to go full bore tough, like we saw like the Tea Party type politicians. You know, how do you respond to those things?
I believe that with Keith Ellison and Raul Grijalva, two members of Congress who are now the chairs, co-chairs of the Progressive Caucus, we'll continue to see growth and, I believe, success for the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Remember one thing, Amy, it's always tough when you're the vanguard, when you're the leaders in a movement. The progressives have always been the champions of health care reform. You know, FDR, when he pushed for health care reform in the 30s, he didn't succeed, even though he and, quite honestly, Eleanor Roosevelt were pushing it darn hard as they could. We finally got health care reform for seniors in the 1960s with Johnson, President Johnson. But we've always been the ones that have pushed. We've kept this country from descending into the right, the abyss, the dark hole of the right. But we look at our failure, for example, to have a public option or single payer, if you want to go that far, in our health care reform. We look at that as a failure. But in fact, we accomplished something that 70 years of Congresses and presidents could not, and that is to move us closer to having health care that everyone can afford in this country. So think of it as the glass half full, not the glass half empty. And with Keith Ellison and Raul Grijalva, we'll continue to make progress.
It would be good to have new leadership, I know, a lot of us are watching this very closely. And
fired
saying,
up and ready to go.
You know,
fired up, ready to go.
We hope that it's in a new direction. And speaking of the glass half full or half empty, what the heck is going to happen with the war in Afghanistan? All the president said was maybe troops will start, you know, pulling out in July of this year, but there was no end date, and it's bankrupting our country morally and economically. What can the Progressive Caucus, what are you prepared to do in this session to address this?
And Amy, this is one area where I part with the president perhaps more than in other places. But I understand his circumstance. He's the president of the United States, and he's looking at what all the people want, not just what Democrats or progressives or people from Illinois want. I believe that Afghanistan was a mistake when George Bush didn't pursue a coherent policy. He got into Iraq, and he took his eyes off the ball. And we could have concluded in Afghanistan what could have been a successful mission to help Afghanistan and the Afghanis run their own country without us having to fear any attacks or threats of terrorism. Today, I think the president is trying to get us extracted from Afghanistan. I have said one thing on Afghanistan. If we have to be there, then we should pay for it. And if you're not going to pay for it, then I can't support it, because you're not giving people a clear picture of what's really going on. If it's so valuable for us to perhaps lose a soldier, the life of a soldier, then we should be able to pay for that, and we haven't yet. And so,
well, we've been charging on a credit card.
I do believe that the American people would be with us if they understood that we're not paying for this war. We're asking China to let us borrow money so we can pay for this war. I believe that if it's worth fighting for, it's worth paying for.
And it's worth telling the American people, pony up.
God's honest truth. Give them the God's honest truth.
So, first of all, reauthorization or defense spending bills come up? Are you voting against those? Because I know other members of the Progressive Caucus, like my own member, Barbara Lee, and others, have said, look, I'm opposed, and then in the end, voted for it.
And remember that, as, for example, I did vote against funding for the Afghanistan war last year. Then the bill, when it came back from the Senate, included the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. Well, we knew it was going to be a tough vote, a close vote, because Republicans were going to vote against the Defense Department bill themselves. Many of us believed that it was critical, critical for this country to finally remove the discrimination against gays and lesbians in our military. And Don't Ask, Don't Tell had to become law. And so it's tough. Sometimes we only get one vote, but lots of things are contained within that one vote. And so it's an interesting situation. But as I said, I think progressives should take heart knowing that this country has been moved forward because of progressives, FDR, folks like that. I consider Barack Obama a progressive. I believe that we're going to make progress. But remember, it's never easy pulling something up a hill. But we're there to do it.
Mm. Well, I want to thank you very much for stopping by, Congressman Javier Becerra from Los Angeles. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Amy.
All right.
Former Stanford student body president, proud to have her back on campus, Miss Amy Allison, just back from D.C., talking to one of our congressmen. He's from L.A., right?
Yeah, he's from L.A.
That must have been great talking to that. I mean, how did it make you feel to be able to sit down with a guy like that?
It's good. I tell you, I'm not, you know, I think our elected officials on the national level,
mm-hmm.
I know how much work, I know what it takes to be a public servant,
mm-hmm.
and the level of accountability needs to be pumped way, way up.
Sure.
We have members like, you know, he's a person who's very community oriented, and,
mm-hmm.
and I agree with him on a lot of the issues. But the bottom line is, when I was asking him about his position on the war and then if he will vote to fund the war, these are nuanced, and we need to have a broader conversation just in general that's less vitriol and more about specifically what are the nuances of this particular policy and how do we relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so that kind of conversation is really good. The other benefit, and here at KZSU, as well as doing this in independent media, we can have a long, extended conversation. I really thank you for allowing me to play 16 minutes of a conversation with a congressman. When do you get that? You get 60 seconds,
yep.
2 minutes.
Sound bites.
But our political conversations need to be much broader and more involved than that. And so when you have a station like KZSU, it can happen here. So.
Well, Stanford believes in that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know that, too, because
right.
you went to school here. It's always encouraged that kind of behavior.
Yeah. No, and it's what has to happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Because what's happened now is that politics, and we know that because if you turn on the news any day of the week, that it's become public relations out to a fine point,
mm-hmm.
where the actual conversation, people can disagree, but let's talk about what are the, let's talk about the values behind the policies. Let's go into more depth
let's hear from regular people. We just don't have that kind of conversation. And more it's been more like a marketing campaign as opposed to politics.
You think the money has destroyed politics? The fact that they have to get so much money to run now?
Absolutely.
It cost President Obama, what, not him personally, but $250 million, the highest price ever paid to become president. That was last time. So that means this time it could be $500 million.
And with the Citizens United decision, the Supreme Court decision that came down last year, it's just hit its one-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big danger that money, particularly that comes from corporate coffers, mm-hmm. is going to further define politics. There are some people with some interesting responses to that who are challenging the Citizens United decision. Common Cause is going in and saying there was a they want this decision reconsidered because the Supreme Court justices did not declare conflict of interest and they should have. There's protesters in the street last week who are saying that Citizens United is an attack upon democracy, which I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of people who are being politicized or reacting to this. And I think many, many more of us should see the big picture, which is that in a democracy, you got a couple of things that have to happen. You got to have a free media, an independent media that, you know, can tell stories about what's happening in the world. And you don't have to necessarily sell advertising to get that story out.
Mm-hmm.
It's real reporting. And the other thing you have to have is a democracy that isn't just dependent on raising money and bringing money in. And because we are now to the point, I think, an extreme, kind of the extreme end where any candidate, I mean, look at how much Meg Whitman here in California spent, and Jerry in the race that ultimately Jerry Brown won.
Yeah, what was that, $40 million?
I mean, incredible. You could have rich individuals run these big campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
If that's how our so-called democracy is going to be run, it's not a democracy. It's really control of the wealthy.
Right.
So, you know, we look at this in the big picture and say, this is a story that we've got to get out there. We've got to involve more people in it and get more people to figure out what we're going to do about it.
In your community where you live in Oakland.
I live in Oakland. Very proud of Oakland.
Are people engaged?
In this national issue? Or
just in general?
It's interesting.
Do they care? Are they asleep? Or, you know, how is Oakland?
Oakland is an interesting place because it's a center for many nonprofits.
Okay.
It's a center for people who have something to say about everything from medical marijuana. It's a leader there.
Oh, Oaksterdam.
Culturally, that's right. Oaksterdam is right in Oakland. But also policing and public safety issues. Oakland tends to be kind of top of the fold. People are always talking about what's going on in Oakland, for good or for bad.
A new Chinese mayor.
Right. We have
female.
Jean Kwan as the mayor of Oakland, and she's won with IRV. No one had ever seen ranked choice voting have the results that it had in Oakland.
Well, now, what is ranked choice voting?
Well, this was a new process for voting that instead of voting for one person at a time and then having a runoff, it's an instant runoff where you rank your choices. And in the case of the Oakland mayor's race last year, there were over 8 candidates. You know, you rank them, you know, your first choice to your last choice.
Oh.
If you don't get your first choice, then your number two choice then goes into the remaining candidates.
Oh, so they don't have to do a runoff. It just automatically happens.
Right. But it became controversial because Don Parada, who was the former state Senate pro tem, who had the support of the state prison guards association and had been around for, you know, in state politics a long time.
Mm-hmm. Career politician,
but he also represented a lot of moneyed interests.
Okay.
Expected to walk in and become mayor. But with ranked choice voting, Gene Kwan, who had but a fraction of his financing, just walked every single inch of the city. And ultimately, she was able to have enough number twos. She won based on number twos.
Really?
And a partnership with another city council member, Rebecca Kaplan. And the way that it all worked is she ended up being mayor. Now, this kind of result was a result of activists in Oakland saying we need ranked choice voting to take money as the only factor for winning or losing out of the equation. So,
wow.
You know, we say on a very local level, Oakland is showing how you can make sure that there's all these approaches to strengthening democracy,
yeah.
and this is just one of those ways.
Could we do that nationally?
Oh, yeah, sure.
We could?
Sure.
Why don't we?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. What we're seeing now is that counties who run a lot of the municipal elections
yeah.
Are looking at it county by county. So there's no big ranked choice. I mean, can you imagine if, you know, you could rank at the national – that would be like a, oh – democracy glory moment. But for now, we're looking at these local elections. Hey, if we can just get ranked choice voting and other ways of public financing, which is, by the way, under threat,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't have to be rich to actually be a public servant, then we can expand the conversation about who gets involved in politics, who gets to rep us, and how broad the conversation is. That's the exciting part of it all.
Amy Allison, you're blowing my mind, man. Will you come back?
Of course.
Girlfriend, stay in touch. You're doing amazing work, too.
Thank you so much.
You got a blog? If people want to get a hold of you, how can they?
OaklandScene.com is my blog that covers Oakland issues with an eye to national politics. Scene, S-E-E-N, as in seen and heard. So OaklandScene.com. And then I also, my personal site is amyallison.org.
So. And your name isn't A-M-Y.
No, it's A-I-M-E-E.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Amy Allison's been our guest for the hour. Amy, thank you so much.
My pleasure. It has been so fun to be here. And thanks for sharing some of the interviews I did. It's really nice to be able to share them with
the
Stanford
audience.
Honored
to have them on the air. Anytime, girlfriend. Also, do want to let you know this show will be archived on Radio 4 All, the number 4 All, as of tomorrow at the latest. You can pull that down. You can listen to it. And founded in 2003, the Pacific Free Clinic is a Stanford University-affiliated student-run health clinic providing free health assessments with the focus on hepatitis B and cardiovascular disease for low-income uninsured adults in the San Jose area. In addition to a complete health assessment, Pacific Free Clinic provides HIV testing, referrals, low-cost medication, lab testing, and health education. Open to all, regardless of immigration status, that's heavy, the clinic offers on-site medical services in English, Spanish, Vietnamese, Cantonese, and Mandarin Chinese. The Pacific Free Clinic is located at Overfelt High School in San Jose. For more information, please visit pacific.stanford.edu or call them 888-321-9972. 888-321-9972. Stand by for George. He's going to bring you some fresh music.
Thank you.